Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Work From Your Happy Place. I am your host, Belinda Ellsworth, and I am super excited about my guest today. I have Lydia Finette with me, and Lydia serves as the Managing Director and Global Director of Strategic Partnerships at Christie's. In addition to her role within Christie's, she has raised over $500 million for more than 400 nonprofits worldwide as the leading benefit auctioneer in the country. Ms. Finette has trained all of Christie's benefit auctioneers for the past 7 years and travels around the country to speak to corporations and groups on the art of selling. Lydia's auctioneering achievements have been featured in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Forbes, Vogue, Cranes, Elle, Vanity Fair, and WWD, as well as Working Mother. The Most Powerful Woman in the Room Is You is her first book and will be published by Gallery Books, an imprint of Simon & Schuster, in the spring of 2019. It is my pleasure to welcome Lydia to our show.
Thank you so much for having me, Belinda. I am absolutely thrilled to be on the show.
Great. Well, I am very excited, and I know your book is due to launch here any day here in April, and that's very, very exciting. I know that's a lot of hard work, so congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, and it's just, I get the privilege of getting to read a copy of that in preparation for our interview, and I just absolutely loved it. So why don't you take a moment, fill in some of the gaps of your bio, introduce yourself to our audience and let them know a little bit more about you.
Absolutely. And I'm such a fan of your podcast. So thank you again for having me. So I've worked at Christie's Auction House in New York for over 20 years. But when I tell people that I've worked at the same place for so long, I oftentimes feel that it doesn't really tell the whole story. I grew up in a small town in Louisiana called Lake Charles. And my parents were not art collectors, and although we would visit museums, I wasn't aware that there was an art world or that art itself was a business. And so my junior year in college, I went on a semester abroad. And during that semester, I really discovered my love of art history. And when I came back my senior year, I immediately declared a second major in art history and started to look for an internship that would match up with this new love that I'd found. And one thing that I'd heard, actually, I believe it was a magazine that I read while I was abroad that mentioned the auction world. And to this day, I still can't tell you what magazine it was, but in many ways, I think it was really what led me to Christie's, because it talked about the glamour of the auction world, which, having worked there for 20 years now, I know is a lot of smoke and mirrors. But at the time, it seemed very, very enticing. And so I told every single person that I could meet that I wanted to work in an auction house. And eventually, somebody that knew somebody who worked at Christie's, and I was able to gain an internship there during the summer, and I fell in love immediately. And that was 20 years ago, and I still love going into work every day. I still love being around the art. But the interesting thing about my role within Christie's is that even though I loved the art, I went into a department called special events. And so we were responsible for entertaining all of our top clients around the world who were coming in to preview sales. Very exciting, but a very rigorous job. And after being named the head of the department at the age of 26, I spent the next 4 years producing over 500 events. So by the time that I was 30, I'd already done somewhere in the couple thousand event range. And I felt like it was time for my next step. And so, you know, I work at a company that is 250 years old. It's older than America. And if you really think about it, it's very hard to impact something that's new within a company that's very entrenched in its ways. And I wrote a business plan for a company called, I wrote a business plan for a department called Strategic Partnerships, because when I was in events, I realized that although we were doing these events, we could actually find sponsors to help us with the events. And therefore, what had previously been a department that was always relying on money coming in from the company with strategic partnerships, we could get everything sponsored, and the events department was no longer a support department. It was a revenue generating department. But as you can imagine, it was a lot of work to change people's perception of a department that had worked for so long in one way and turn it into something completely new. And I know in this day and age, everybody talks about intrapreneurs and how it's a great thing. But trust me, 10 years ago, it was not a word that I was hearing a lot. So every day was really nerve-wracking, but also incredibly exciting, because in events, I had done so many events that I felt like I really knew my job without even batting an eyelash. I could solve almost any problem because I'd seen all of the problems before. But strategic partnerships for me was the Wild West. It was completely different than anything I had ever done before. And so there were days where I just walked into work with a huge pit in my stomach, hoping that this wasn't going to be the day that someone said, "We're not sure that this is going to work out." Yeah. And then in addition to that, as you mentioned in my bio, I run the charity auctioneering program for Christie's, which I'm so proud of because it's something that I'm so passionate about. And essentially, Christie's offers auctioneers on behalf of the company to raise critical funds for nonprofits. So I get on stage with major celebrities like Hugh Jackman or Bruce Springsteen, Matt Damon, Uma Thurman, to support the charities that they've lent their faces to and to encourage people in the audience to give generously. And so that's really the other side of my job that I also love and has been an amazing experience for me.
I found it all, reading about it in your book, so incredibly interesting. And when you were sharing about getting your internship, there was a lot of tenacity on your part in I think you've always been somewhat entrepreneurial when I read your book, because you were always looking for the challenge and providing the solution of sometimes challenges that the company didn't even realize they had, or a solution that could provide a complete new stream of income, like with the strategic partnerships. But I loved your story of your tenacity in getting that internship. Do you want to share that just a tiny bit? Because I think that's one of the things that people looking to get in their own business or looking for that break, they give up, or they take the no, and they don't keep moving, or they don't forge ahead, or they don't say, okay, how about if we did it like this? Then what would that look like for you? Create a new picture, get people to think out of the box. And that's what I see in you in reading your book, is you're the person who gets people to think out of the box in order to get the result that you'd really like to get.
And I think that's really the way that an entrepreneur thinks in many ways. It's sort of, you see the hole that no one sees. And what is good about that is that if you can bring people along with your vision, that's how you get things done. So in the case of my internship, as I said, I'd met somebody who worked for Christie's. She just started, I think she was in her early 20s, and she gave me the number for the internship coordinator, who was an older woman who'd been with Christie's for many years. And as I say in the book, you know, the funny thing about when I was looking for an internship, we didn't have iPhones and we didn't have phones that had caller ID. So people picked up their phone every single time you called, which is hilarious now, but really at the time it was very beneficial to me, because every day I would call Ms. Libby and every day she would pick up the phone. And I think at some point she thought that I would stop, but I just was so passionate about the idea of working for Christie's that I didn't want to let this dream go. And so I would pick up my phone every single day and I would say the same thing. Good morning, Miss Libby. My name is Lydia Finette. It's me calling again today. Today is the day we're going to find this internship for me at Christie's. Mind you, the internship program was fully closed by this point, and she had told me many days in a row, but I think I eventually wore her down. And so one day I decided to call and really come up with a different solution and almost give her a different way of thinking about it. And so I asked her why the cap was 30 interns. And she explained that the interns went on museum trips and that was really the max that any museum could take. And so what I said was, well, what if I did the internship program, because who doesn't want a free intern, but I didn't go on the museum groups unless, you know, for instance, someone was sick or they'd stayed out a little late the night before, as sometimes interns do. And wouldn't that be great? Because then I would be there and I could be the person, so you still had a full program. And I think probably by that point, she was just so tired of hearing my voice that she just felt like she had to do something. So she sort of said, okay, it was the first time she didn't say no. She said, I'll get right back to you. And then she came back an hour later and agreed that I could do a modified internship. And sure enough, over the summer, I think there was only one museum trip I didn't get to go on, because ultimately there's always someone missing from a group of 30 for whatever reason. So yes, very, very tenacious, but that's how you get things done, especially mm-hmm. things that you want. You can't give up.
That's exactly right. That's why I loved that story. So how has the business shaped your lifestyle today, especially now you've been with them for a very long time and a lot's changed in your life during that time? So how has that impacted you?
Well, as I mentioned before, I really have two full-time jobs. I run strategic partnerships, and that's during the day. So, I go into work after dropping off my kids, which, as you were alluding to, I have three children, ages 6, 4, and 2. So my home life is very busy too. So I drop off my daughter at school, or my son, depending on who my husband is taking the other one to school. And then I go home after I finish work, put my children to bed, and then I go back out and take the charity auctions at night. And it's funny because most people, when I tell them this, think I'm absolutely crazy. But you have to remember, I started taking auctions at the age of 24. And so my lifestyle was already very much modeled around a two-part day. The only difference was that I obviously wanted to prioritize my children. And that meant always being home to have dinner with them, to give them baths, and to put them to bed. And so really the change for me was about leaving later, actually, let's be honest, getting up very early and then leaving later to go to work. But then also, not spending as much time visiting with people around the office, but really maximizing my time at work and then getting home to spend time with the kids and go back out. And so it's really, more than anything, my lifestyle is very efficient, and I use every minute that I can to ensure that I can really do what I want to do, and I'm never feeling like I'm not with my children enough or that I'm not giving enough to work. And certainly there are days that is not true, but I would say for the most part, I feel very balanced in my life, and I really enjoy it, and I feel fulfilled. I feel fulfilled when I'm with my family, and I feel fulfilled with my work as well.
That's great. And I think you've learned not just balance, but it is to be present in the moment with whichever thing it is you're doing. And that's where I think so many people, they have this guilt around not being with their kids enough. But when they are with them, they're thinking about the other thing that they need to do, or they're not giving it their full 100% attention. And I feel like that is one of the things that I've done in life, is when I am, and that's what I resonated with your book. So when I am at work, I'm going to be 100% at work, but then I'm going to leave and be 100% with my family. And on my days that are family time or those times that I have, then I'm present 100% because they deserve that time that you have allotted for them. And I think that along with the balance is also learning to be present in the moment of what you're in, passionate, let that passion carry through. So that's how I resonated with you. And would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And I think, to that point too, there is also something to be said for knowing that you do have to just put work away at times. And I tried to be honest about that in my book, because I do feel like, especially in a place like New York, work is constant. You could literally work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And so you may remember there's a chapter where I talk about, nailing this huge proposal. And I was so excited. It was something that I had been working on for a long time. And I walked into an overwater bungalow in Tahiti with my husband for our honeymoon. And there was a proposal that I'd been working on that my boss had faxed to the hotel. And I took one look at it and I threw it in the trash. And I was just like, how many times in life am I going to have the opportunity to be here in this moment? I can't spend this time doing this proposal right now. That's just not going to happen. And it's the same as when I come home at night. I stand outside of my door until I finish the email that I'm working on, or the thought that I need, or if there is a list of things going in my head, which, as you can imagine with a book launch right now, is definitely happening. I write those all down on a list in my phone, and then I put my phone down when I walk in the door, and I don't pick it up again until the kids go to bed. And that way I can really be present, but I also feel like I'm not thinking about it the whole time, which is hard because mm-hmm. the iPhone makes it a very easy thing to do. But I really try to be very, very strict about that with myself, because then I enjoy my life and I'm not constantly feeling like I'm in the wrong place.
Absolutely. And I do remember that story because that is where I went on my honeymoon.
Is that right?
Yes. So that's why when I say I resonated with your book, I did so much. I loved it so much.
Oh, good. That's so funny.
I know.
Yeah, why would you want to miss that turquoise blue water looking at a 42-page proposal? No, thank you.
No, that's absolutely right. So share with us what you feel are a couple of your really great skill sets that have helped you be as successful as you are.
The funny thing about starting off in events is, you know, there are people above you and you can kind of watch what's going on. And because we were doing so many events when I first started, one thing I quickly understood that I did not want to do as a business leader if I was ever to have a career path, which I'm not even sure I was thinking about at that age, but I do remember thinking time and time again, as the timing before an event closed, the gap before the beginning of an event and the last things had to be done closed, I would watch people get so completely irrational. And I remember watching people who were senior to me very upset, and people who I'd been talking to 20 minutes before yelling at staff. And I just remember thinking time and time again, I don't want to be like that. And I grew up in the South, and I think, you know, we have a saying that I talk about in the book, you catch more bees with honey. I think that there is something in my upbringing that I do try to always be kind and calm. But being calm and being firm in the way that you're acting when things are going wrong, I believe is one of the best traits to have as a leader, because everything trickles down from the top. Most people that you surround yourself with in a working environment, you can always tell those people, because when things are going wrong, they realize it is not their place to heighten the hysteria. Instead, they sort of just maintain a calm, even if they're upset. And that trickles down to everyone around them. People understand that things may not be going right, but they're not losing their mind because the person above them is losing their mind. And I always try to remember that, even in moments when I'm feeling very tense or upset, I just always try to remember to remain calm and just remain firm instead of getting upset and losing my temper or something like that. And I think that also has to do with, you know, just being kind to people, because it just goes so much further in life than, you know, being irrational or ugly or yelling. Those things just never serve anyone well. And then I'm also a very decisive person, but I'm also very nimble. So I will make a decision quickly, but if I see that it's not working out, I have no problem changing it. So, you know, if I say this is happening right now, and then we're halfway down that path and I realize that something's not going right, I don't stick my feet in the mud and say, we're not moving. I quickly just say to everyone, okay, this isn't working, let's go to the right. Or, okay, this isn't going, let's go to the left. Because I just think that there's no reason if you recognize that something's going wrong, there is no reason to stop it right there. You just need to pivot in a different direction.
Absolutely. That's great. So let's talk about one of your greatest accomplishments or something that's super meaningful for you.
Well, having three children for me is without a doubt, my greatest achievement and accomplishment in life. I mean, just being a mom is such an amazing and transformative moment. And I had my children when I was in my early 30s, and I had had a very long career before that. I mean, I'd been working for 12 years before I had my first child. And I think that just becoming a mom was a very transformative moment for me. And it impacted everything in my world. It impacted my work life. It impacted my friends and my friendships. It deepened the relationship with my parents. And so that certainly is my greatest achievement. But professionally, I've also had great achievements in starting strategic partnerships and having had a department within Christie's succeed for the past 10 years and hitting my targets every year is a huge achievement. And I'm so proud of that. I'm proud of my team for everything that they do, because they're incredible. And then truly, I think at this point in my life, my greatest work achievement has been writing this book, because I wrote this book on top of my three children, on top of the auctions, on top of having a full-time job. And I wrote it in 3 months. And it was one of the most stressful periods of my life, really one of the most stressful periods of my life. I really hope to never replicate those 3 months of my life. But I mean, I was still nursing my third child. And, you know, they told me that I had, you know, a word count. And when I really looked at how many words I had to do. I just sort of went back into myself and said, okay, you need to dig deep and figure out how to do this. And I took the approach of writing 1,000 words a day for 60 days in order to hit the deadline. And I did it. I mean, you should have seen me. I was on vacation with friends writing 1,000 words a day on the beach. I was holed up in my bedroom late at night writing 1,000 words a day, but I did it every single day. And then I handed it in on my deadline. And the editor said to me, I can't believe you turned this in. I was like, I didn't think I had a choice. I didn't realize that people didn't turn things on deadline, which she thought was hilarious. But yes, writing the book has just been, and it's just been an amazing ride. And the doors that it's opening up now have been beyond my wildest expectations. So it's been very exciting.
That is very exciting. And it is stressful. Our book is, I think, the book I did was about, it's 365 pages, I think. And they expected me to have that done in 4 months of writing time.
Oh my gosh.
It came out to be about 8 chapters every month is how I believe that it was. And so it was writing 2 chapters a week then, basically, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't even know, I never looked at it as a word count, but I know that's how I did mine. It was based on these chapters and it was intense. It was extremely stressful. And I know I would say it was one of the most stressful times in my life, but there was also for anybody out there writing, because it was through a publisher, and I'm sure that yours is that way too. You don't just have this liberty of I'm writing a book and I'm taking my time and it took me 2 years. It's like, okay, here it is. Here's where we're going to launch it. Here's your deadlines. Here's where it has to go to editing. This is when it needs to be done. And because of all those deadlines, I was like, you hit your deadlines, right?
Right.
right. I just never even considered for 1 minute not hitting them. But it was, I'm glad I did it. Like I might have let it drag on forever and then I might not have ever gotten it finished. And I realized a lot within myself that I didn't know that I had, as I'm sure you did. Like, and I can't even for one iota of 1 second imagine doing that nursing. So hats off to you.
Thank you. It was a lot. But I mean, you know, I've said to a couple of people, and you will certainly appreciate this having written a book in a very short timeline, that I didn't know then what I know now. And what I know, if I knew now what I didn't know then, I probably wouldn't have written it or I wouldn't have embarked upon the adventure. But I'm so glad I didn't know, because it's been such an amazing thing. Mm-hmm. It really has. And all of these dreams and these goals that I've had for myself that I've roadmapped, you know, put on a piece of paper for years, are all starting to come true. I mean, I signed with a speakers bureau, which was incredibly exciting to me because I love speaking. Obviously, I've been on stage for so many years and it was just something that I really wanted to do. And I've been talking to people about TV and film rights for the book, which, again, things that I couldn't have even dreamed about are happening because I did dig deep and I did make it happen, which I think is also the point of the book. Like, no one does it for you, right? You have to make it happen yourself.
Right. So in sort of opposite of that, what's one of your greater challenges that you've had and how did you overcome that?
So I'm a very empathetic person. And one of my biggest challenges, especially when I first started working, was being in a position where I had to make cuts, especially in charity auctioneering, with people who I genuinely liked as people that I knew didn't necessarily have the skill set to do it. And so, you know, I tell this one story of having trained this young gentleman who had been dating another girl in the class, and she worked on my team. I knew that they'd broken up. I knew his heart was broken, and I passed him really because of that. I just knew it had been a terrible week for him, and I felt like I couldn't pile on. And then he went out to take one of his first auctions, and I got a call from the organization asking for a check because they felt like he had left so much money on the table at the auction. And it was one of those things where I realized very early on that I had to take my emotion out of work. Kind of what I was saying about going calm when things are going wrong. Like, you can't necessarily use that emotion at all times. Like, you have to make rational business judgments as well. And so I think back to that sometimes during hard conversations and the fact that it would have been more beneficial for him not to pass because he would have never had that experience either. And so that, I think, has been one of the biggest challenges. And I feel like I'm much better at it now than I was for a long time. But it's very hard. It's very hard, especially when you're empathetic, to make decisions that you feel are going to personally hurt someone. But sometimes you also have to realize that it is the right thing.
Absolutely. So what's working from your happy place mean to you?
Without a doubt, I'm happiest with my family and friends. I mean, truly nothing makes me happier than spending time surrounded by the people that I love. But also working from a happy place means that I'm excited and challenged by what I do. Professionally, it means that I'm working on projects that interest me, or I'm collaborating with people who are excited about the opportunities that are in front of them. And as I was saying earlier, writing this book has been, well, actually, now that the book is written, I should preface that. This has really been an extraordinary time, and I truly feel like I'm working from my happy place, both professionally, personally, and in the book.
That is great. So what advice would you give to others who want to be entrepreneurs or are looking, you know, I look at you as an entrepreneur, but you've been in this same position. Not same position, but with the same company for over 20 years, which is such, I commend you in that for sure. But but there is, within even a job, you create entrepreneurial opportunities for yourself, as you've done. So what advice would you give to those either wanting to follow that entrepreneurial path or are looking to carve a place for themselves in a it may be a position that where they work or they've been there a while and they would really like to have a new challenge or do something different?
I believe that you can absolutely in this day and age have a job and a side hustle. I love the idea of a side hustle. I'd say in the book, I was in love with that idea of a side hustle before the millennials started putting on their coffee cups, because I do believe that you can have a job that pays your bills and start something that you're passionate about on the side. And if it all works out, then eventually whatever you're passionate about can become your full-time job if you can figure out a way to monetize it and live the life that you want to live. So I would just encourage people who are looking to do things and be a little bit more entrepreneurial, especially those who are working within companies, just realize that a lot of times what you're doing externally can also benefit you in terms of what you're doing in your working role, your sort of day-to-day. And I don't think you necessarily have to jump ship immediately to make that happen. So really, you know, weigh the pros and cons of staying within a company and starting something new, because a lot of times, especially if you're scared that you can't do it, testing the waters is a good way to start out.
Absolutely. So what are some new and exciting things that you're working on, or what do you think our listeners might benefit from? And then how can they find you and how can they find your book?
Well, I definitely said this before, but the greatest lesson that I learned from writing the book is whatever you want in life, you have to go after it yourself. Put a pen to paper, write it down, and think through the steps that are going to get you there, and tell every single person you have ever met, not even just those in your industry, but every person you come across, what you want to achieve, because you will be shocked at how many people will open their networks to you. And then in return, I would say do that to other people too, because then you get the side benefit of also helping other people, which I think is the greatest feeling in the world. You know, I really spent so much time hoping and wishing that things were going to happen with writing a book for so many years, but it wasn't until I actually sat done and wrote the book that something happened. And now I'm talking to my publishing company about writing a young adult adaptation, The Most Powerful Girl in the Room Is You. And as I mentioned earlier, I've been speaking with a number of different agencies about TV and film rights, and I've signed with the CAA Speakers Bureau. So I like to say that I'm just getting started, that this is the beginning, and I hope to always be with Christie's. So I think it's all good.
That is good. So in closing, I want you to share one of your really fun stories. I know which one I'd love to pick, my favorite one for you to share, but I'm going to let you pick your favorite one. But
is it the Matt Damon story?
Yes. I love that story. I just was like, I tried to recode the whole thing to my husband as we were driving down the road, and I surely was missing points of it, but he still got a kick out of it. So I told it, I guess he told it well enough. But here's what I want to say about your book, first and foremost, to our audience. I know it says the most powerful woman in the room is you. However, this book is about sales as yes. well. And she is an expert in sales. And this book delivers on what it means to be a good salesperson. And so I think any man can benefit from this book as well. And I just really wanted to make that clear to anyone that's sitting and listening, because it's a really great sales book. And then it's a really inspirational book for women, but also for anyone who really wants to take their self to the next level, that really wants to get in the driver's seat of their own life and says, I'm going to be responsible. And I think that's for men and women alike. So I just want to make sure everyone understands that. That's my takeaway. And I'm going to do a book review on this for you in our newsletter that goes out to about 100,000 people. So
amazing.
I wanted to wait till after the book launches to do that because that would make sense. But anyway, well, do you want to end with one of your fun stories?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the Matt Damon story is all of my friends' favorite story for me to tell at a cocktail party. So when I had been doing auctions for a number of years, I went to take a private school auction in New York City. And private school auctions in New York are as elaborate as the galas that you would attend for any major nonprofit anywhere in the world. And if they have parents within the school who are celebrities, a lot of times they'll ask them to donate something. And so this particular year, they said to me, you know, Matt Damon is a parent at the school, which, as you can imagine, I almost passed out. But I played it very cool on the phone. Like, this was not a big deal for me, but this was huge. I mean, this is Jason Bourne, as you know. And I decided that I wanted him to come up for the paddle raise at the end. So if you're not familiar with the charity auction lingo, the live auction lots are the things that you sell that are priceless items. As I was saying earlier, something like, you know, a dance lesson with Madonna, things that you literally cannot get. And then the paddle raise you do at the end, it's the moment for everyone to give any amount of money. And you can start as high as $10,000 and go down to $100. So it's just really to give anyone the opportunity to raise their paddle and give if they'd like to give a donation to the school. And so I was taking the live portion of the auction, and there was a lot that was going very high. And there were two tables, and Matt Damon was at one of the tables. And there were other people at the other table, and they kept going higher and higher and higher. And because Matt was coming up for the paddle raise at the end, I had been introduced to him early on in the evening for 2 seconds, and he couldn't have been nicer. And my name is Lydia. I should probably tell you all that so you remember that for the purpose of this story. But, you know, I'd met Matt for about 2 seconds and said, oh, hi, I'm Lydia. And he said, it's so nice to meet you. And I said, you'll come up for the paddle raise. And he agreed. So I'm on stage going back and forth between the two tables. And finally, I hear out of the corner of my eye, I hear Lindsay. And it was loud enough so that it was clear that someone was yelling it at me, but there was nobody else in the room talking, so it must have been me. So I turned and I could see Matt Damon gesticulating wildly at his table, yelling Lindsay. And I looked at him and I was sort of like, yes. And he said, you should double the lot, meaning that I should sell two of the lots, meaning that I could ask the donor to sell two. But I had already asked the donor, I only had one to sell. And I had that moment where I thought to myself, everyone in the audience knows that my name is Lydia, except for Matt Damon, who's just called me Lindsay. And if this were not Matt Damon, I would tell the person, because I'm the person on stage and I wrote a book called The Most Powerful Woman in the Room Is You, I would tell them that my name is Lydia. So I sort of looked at the audience and I said, you know, unfortunately, I can't sell two lots because I only have one lot to sell. And so everyone said, you know, sort of groaned. And then I turned to Matt Damon in front of the audience and I said, by the way, my name is actually Lydia. And he was just like, oh my God. And you saw him laughing and everyone was like, oh God, this is terrible. So when he came up for the paddle raise at the end of the night, he got on stage and he's such a great guy. And he sort of said to the audience, I'm so excited to be here with my co-auctioneer, Lindsay. And he said it on purpose. And I turned to him and I said, oh, I don't know if everyone's familiar with my co-auctioneer this evening, a struggling actor named Mike Diamond. And the audience could not believe what I had just done, because of course, this is Matt Damon. And he thought it was hilarious. And he continued on. And actually, I went to take another auction not too long afterwards, where he was the co-auctioneer. And he called himself Mike Diamond on that night. So it was just, it was a great lesson in remembering that it doesn't matter how high you go up in the celebrity of life or the ranks of your company, people are just humans. And at the end of the day, you just have to treat everybody the same. And you know, I couldn't rename myself Lindsay because too many people already knew, even if Jason Bourne was asking. And that's the story.
I love that story. Oh, the book is filled with so many great tips on selling. So I just loved it. And I know that anybody listening here, you're going to love it too. So I hope that you'll grab her book and check it out. And I can't thank you enough for being part of our podcast today. I was really excited about it. I get excited for all of the podcasts that I'm going to have, but I'm just going to be honest. I was especially excited about today's. I just really resonated with you and the book. And I just find it to be, I don't know, I look at that and it probably isn't nothing is as ever as glamorous as it seems when you're right into it. I mean, when you travel and speak a lot, people think that's glamorous, but there certainly are parts to it, but it comes with a lot of downside in travel and hours of trying to get home no matter what and everything that that entails. But I was definitely taken with the whole idea of working at Christie's and the auctions that you do, and it just was, it was just fun. It was a really fun. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, it's been it has been a wonderful 20 years, and I look forward to the next chapter. And as I said before, I'm such a fan of your podcast, and I can't thank you enough for having me.
All right.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends, and be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.